Brad, good morning.
How's it going?
Yeah, very well, thanks. Great to have you back on the program.
Yeah.
Now, when we talk about space junk, first off, just from a layman's perspective, what are we talking about when we talk about space junk? Where does this stuff come from?
So space junk refers to all things humans have put in space, and mostly that connotation is all things in space that humans no longer have control over. So sometimes it's defunct satellites. Sometimes, you know, every time that rocket goes up and you see those pictures of rocket boosters, either they go around floating in space or they come back crashing down. And then there's just the bits of things that fall off or break off. When an astronaut, you know, sometimes we've heard an astronaut's on a spacewalk and they drop a screwdriver or spanner. That's space junk. There literally is a screwdriver and spanner currently orbiting the Earth at about 40,000 kilometers an hour. If that doesn't make you feel safe, I don't know what does.
Yeah, it's a little bit concerning. I mean, the obvious maxim would be what goes up must come down.
It's spot on, exactly. Even the International Space Station at some point will come crashing back down to the Earth.
So what kind of concerns does space junk actually represent?
So huge. So, I mean, I think there's two issues to look at this. What is going to happen to the stuff coming down, and what is happening to the stuff in space? So firstly, as you said, there's the Tiangong-1, the Chinese space station, come back down to the Earth. The reason it's a big deal is it's what we call an uncontrolled orbit. We don't know and don't have full control over the moment it re-enters. Lots of these things re-enter all the time. So every day there's hundreds of tons, literally, of debris coming back down to the Earth, and that is not an exaggeration. Most land in the southern Pacific Ocean, so literally between New Zealand and South America, is kind of a spacecraft graveyard for over 1,000 square kilometers, bits of space stations. That's where Mir is, the Russian space station, all sorts of stuff. That's where it's designed to land. That's where Tiangong-1 was going to go. But because they lost control over it, they don't know exactly the moment reentry is going to happen and exactly where it's going to have its final resting place, so to speak.
Now, looking at the solution to this, the technology that's being proposed is essentially, you know, if you watch Mythbusters, I think this kind of seems like, you know, from a layperson's perspective, every scientist's solution to problems, lasers and explosions. can you tell us a little bit more about this proposed technology to actually shoot the space junk down with these, I assume, very powerful lasers?
So this is something we do here at Mount Tremblant. This is one of the research projects we have going on now. So firstly, this is only focused on the small bits of debris. This isn't going to solve the big bits because you can't have a power, you know, you would literally need the Death Star to do anything. So we're not building the Death Star. Apparently, we've been told we can't. We can't destroy the moon either, you know.
Not in the budget,
but,
I guess.
Yeah, people are just fun spoilers. But we focus on the small bits. So what we use is a laser to redirect it. So we don't actually explode it as much as it'd be cool. The problem is if you break a small piece into smaller pieces, you just have smaller pieces floating around. So what you do is if you imagine the space debris is kind of like water going down the drain. It's slowly sloshing around, spiraling around, and eventually goes down. But in that time, it crosses the paths of all the other satellites, and that's where we worry, that it can crash into something, and when, you know, a screwdriver going at 40,000 kilometers an hour is going to do a lot of damage. You can just think of what a bullet does at 700 kilometers an hour. In fact, a good example is a flake of paint, literally a piece of paint, created a hole 5 centimeters deep in the bulletproof glass of the space shuttle.
Yeah, that's absolutely astounding.
You don't need to be big to do it. And there's literally hundreds of thousands to millions of these pieces. So the laser, the idea is you use the laser to actually push the debris. So you push the debris straight up. What happens is then gravity pulls it literally straight back down and it burns up harmlessly in the Earth's atmosphere. So you're using the laser to actually redirect the stuff and let the atmosphere take care of it and burn it up completely.
That sounds absolutely astonishing. Dr. Ben Green, the chairman of the Space Environment Research Center, he stated that Australia is the obvious place to station this potential laser technology. Why would that be?
Well, so, I mean, firstly, we're actually the ones leading it and working on it. the other thing is you need two things. You need clear sky conditions and you need less traffic, sky traffic. And that means birds, that means airplanes, that means drones. So you need slightly remote spots. So, you know, if you put a laser system in the middle of Sydney, not really good because you might be hitting planes with giant lasers. And that's an easy way to get your funding cut, let me tell you. So remote locations. And also, one of the things you want to do is you want to cover most of the orbits that satellites go. So satellites have very specific orbits or paths, just like, you know, airplanes have very specific paths or there's roads. Satellites do the same thing. And Australia, because of landmass, we can cover all the way in the south towards the Arctic and then all the way up towards the north towards, say, the equator. So we can cover a lot of space efficiently, and that's really one of the big reasons why Australia ends up being great. And we're also the leader in this technology.
Now, the movie Gravity, I think, is what jumps to a lot of people's minds when they think about the threat of space junk. That was sort of one of these worst-case scenarios, as I understand. And from my understanding, it would basically, if a situation like that occurred in real life, it would completely stop our ability to launch satellites into space, to launch spacecraft into space, because it would just be too dangerous, essentially. So this obviously is a pressing concern. The technology we're talking about, the laser technology we're talking about, how far away would that actually be before it's operational?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think you're right. It is one of these worries. It's one of those, you put it in perspective, every country that doesn't like each other, even ones that are currently expelling diplomats from other countries, actually work together on space debris because it affects everyone's satellite, and everything we do is satellite-driven. So there's a big push to how we do it. And you're right, gravity is actually an accurate representation. Luckily, spoiler alert, George Clooney got what he deserved. But, you know, the fact is that just a few pieces can create a chain reaction, which breaks into more things, which breaks into more things. And there's this real worry that it's called Kessler syndrome. This was calculated back in 1978, that at some point there will be this chain reaction. You will no longer be able to launch satellites. So that is a real worry. The current model says 2035. Seems like far away, but the fact is in 15, 17 years, we could potentially lose all satellites, and satellite infrastructure is a big deal. So the laser can go all the way up to what we call 3,000 kilometers. So there's different layers of satellites. There's low Earth orbit, which the majority are, so that's up to anywhere between 2 and 800 kilometers. There's middle Earth orbit, not middle Earth like in Lord of the Rings, but middle Earth orbit, that goes between 1,000 and 3,000 kilometers, and then there's geosynchronous orbit, which is 36,265 kilometers.
And are there any sort of alternates we have in play that would be used to deal with this space debris?
So there's a few, you know, and ultimately one of the things is how, firstly, let's limit it. You know, the first solution is let's limit the debris. Let's stop producing it. One of the simple things is a large source of debris is all those rocket boosters. This is where things like SpaceX, so we celebrated a few months ago, SpaceX's giant new rocket, and those rockets come back down and land. And that's the key thing, is they're reusable, so they don't enter and they end up as another big piece of space debris. We're also working on making satellites even smaller so they can completely burn up in the Earth's atmosphere upon reentry, because one of the big pieces of space debris are defunct satellites. There's over 1,800 current satellites that are just uncontrolled and floating around. In fact, actually, in 2009, a Russian Cosmos satellite crashed into an Iridium satellite communication satellite and just crashed and created two new ones.
Mm.
Like, they created 7,000 pieces of debris. So there's a huge range from the small to big, and so there's a lot of people working on how to deal with it. What are the protocols? Let's stop creating space debris, both in the satellites we build and the stuff we launch, and then start to solve it.
It is absolutely sort of a fascinating, very scary issue. As you say, we do have a lot of satellites in play. It's a major part of our world infrastructure these days, a very pressing concern. Brad, thank you very much. Really do appreciate your time.
No worries. My pleasure.